Welcome, everybody. I'm Linda Robinson, by the way. I'm the instructor for the workshop at the Gloucester Writers Center. It's called Writing a 10-Minute Play, and we invite you to come and join us and write a 10-minute play and have your own play up here. What you're about to see is not the end product exactly, because the playwright, a play is based on the spoken word, and that means that the playwrights need to hear what they've written in the mouths of actors with a little bit of direction. We've done just a little bit. These are what we call staged readings. So they're not just done at a music stand. We've got a little tiny bit of blocking and some props. I want to just start by introducing the playwrights. We'll start with Charles Steiner.
Yay!
He can't get up. Just wait for you. Just wait. Carol Froelich. Stand up. And Anne McCarta. And Dina Grady.
Yay!
And Constance Hsu. Where's Constance Hsu? And Susan Fry. We have six plays. We're going to stop at the end of every play and give you a few minutes to write on your feedback sheets. The writers really, we read them all, we talk about them. They're really important. So there are suggestions for things that you can write about. And just write what you feel, what you see, because these plays are still works in progress. The first play is called Life, and it was written by Charles Steiner. The characters in Life are the husband, an athletic build tending to flab, the wife, and a doctor. The setting is a waiting room in the doctor's office. The time is present, mid-morning.
Jesus Christ. Never in 100 years did I think I'd be doing this.
Neither did I. We wouldn't be here except for that letter from Brian's school.
How could a principal at a preschool suggest that Brian needs testing? What is her doctor's degree? She can barely run a preschool. She has the gall to hint that there's something wrong with Brian? Jesus, he's only 3 years old.
I can only believe that in her position, she must have had training that would indicate something is not right.
That is such bullshit. You're impossible. You even think Obama is a great president.
Oh, stop being such a jerk. You only see things that the way you want them to be.
Brian was born. I was on cloud nine. I was the proudest, happiest man on earth.
True. Brian is just what we hoped and prayed for. Our prayers were really answered. I can't understand why he needs all this testing. This is the third doctor that he's seen.
I know Brian is great. Sometimes he just doesn't seem quite right. I know I never said this before, but lately, I've been worried.
What do you mean with that stupid statement? Brian is a beautiful, happy, smiling little boy. You are ignorant to say something that stupid.
Of course he is. But only some of the time. Honestly, I'm concerned about him.
If you're so damn worried, have you ever considered it's because of the way you act? You're so damn short and quick-tempered. I can't believe how impatient you are, and he's only 3 years old.
God knows I try. I find him very frustrating. Granted, I'm no expert, but shouldn't he be doing what other three-year-olds do? When he has play dates, he doesn't interact with the other kids. He never plays with them. Nor does he appear interested in his toys. He shows no curiosity. I think he really enjoys being left alone. For the life of me, I think something is not right.
Here you go again. You're so damn unfair. Brian might be a little bit slower than other three-year-olds, But that definitely doesn't mean there's something wrong. He's very content within himself. He doesn't have to be like every other child.
Maybe he isn't like every other child. I remember when I held Brian for the first time, I thought I would burst with happiness.
Are you saying that you're not happy with him anymore?
No. He just doesn't act as I expected. He never makes eye contact. And when I speak to him, he never responds or acts like he doesn't hear. He rarely talks, and he sounds like a baby. He never waves bye-bye or points his finger. When the other kids come over to play, he just ignores them and then stares off into space.
It's just a phase.
You have got to be kidding. 3 doctors and thousands of dollars, and it's just a goddamn phase? You have got to be joking.
You are so impatient with him and the most unsympathetic ass I've ever met. He is just a little boy. Don't be so damn insensitive. You drive me crazy.
I knew this would end up being my fault. I think Brian is wonderful and I love him with all my heart, but you refuse to see that he isn't perfect.
Are you saying that I don't see him for what he is?
Well, let's just say you sort of ignore the way he acts. You seem to deny that he doesn't act normally.
I will admit that sometimes I do wonder about him. But then I compare him with your brother, Freddy, and frankly, how he performs.
Hold on, lady. Are you saying that Freddy doesn't act right?
You know damn well he acts like a fool, always saying inappropriate things and constantly embarrassing everyone. Perhaps it's genetic.
You can't possibly be suggesting the way Brian acts has anything to do with my family genes.
I think it's something to consider.
You want to talk about your sister?
What is that supposed to mean?
You badmouth Freddy, and your sister has been married 3 times. You know damn well, and well and good, how she is impossible to talk to and has little or no attention span. She almost seems to be living on another planet.
How dare you speak about my sister this way? My sister has nothing to do why we are sitting here in this doctor's office. My little boy has been undergoing hours of testing and you are trying to blame it on my sister? You are a callous bastard.
Okay. We both know something is wrong. Brian is the problem, and we both knew it before we got that letter from his school. He just isn't acting like a 3-year-old.
Since when are you an expert on child behavior? Particularly since you pay no attention to him.
Now I'm not a good father?
If you want the truth, and I'm not sure you do, you stink as a father.
How can I be a good father when every time I hold him, he cries, and then you run and take him away from me and cradle him in your arms? When I try to play with him, he ignores me and wants to be left alone to stare at the wall.
Oh, what a joke! The last time you played with him was 2 years ago, and you haven't held him in months.
Ever since we brought Brian home, you have always acted like I was a nuisance and in the way. I was eager, and I was even looking forward to helping with him.
I find that very hard to believe. Did you ever feed him at 2 a.m.?
You know I'm a heavy sleeper. I never heard him, and anyway, you could have awakened me.
Oh, fat chance you would have gotten up. Did you ever change a diaper?
That isn't fair. You know I'm squeamish. Whenever I held him, you couldn't stand it. You always took him away.
You're such an oaf. You were so damn uncomfortable, I was afraid you would drop him.
I really tried to be a good father. When I got on the floor to play with him, his disinterest really upset me. Do you know that he never looked at me and said, "Daddy"?
You are so unfair about Brian. You feel he has to act the way you want, and if he doesn't, then it's his fault? He's his own person, and he has his own personality.
What the hell is going on in there? It has been over 3 hours. Since you brought up Freddy, let's talk about your family. Do you have any idea how I feel when I'm with them? Your father acts like I stepped in something. Your wonderful mother has, since the day we became engaged, behaved like I'm beneath her family's lofty standards. She has always made me feel like trash.
How can you be surprised with the way you act? Have you ever tried to make conversation with my father? Have you ever said a nice word to my mother? When she visits Brian, you always ignore him. You barely thank them for their Christmas gifts. How do you think that makes them feel? You have no class. You are an abject bore.
All right, Miss Perfect. When is the last time you called my mother? When is the last time you invited her for dinner? Even when she comes to visit Brian, her only grandchild, you act like it's an imposition.
Oh, you know, your mother has always hated me ever since I stole her perfect son.
Do you have any conception of how sick and tired I am of you finding fault with everything I do?
If I understand you correctly, you are the wounded party and I am causing you discomfort? Well, asshole. Do you think it is fun being married to you? You are overweight, boring, and a clod. For the life of me, I can't figure out why I married you. And on top of being a clown, you're not a good provider. And you're a big disappointment in the sex department. And another thing, you think it's funny to put me down in front of other couples? Does that make you feel like a big shot? I can guarantee you, Buster, you are no big shot.
Now we're getting down to the nitty-gritty. Speaking of our sex life, I can't recall having any since we brought Brian home. You are without a doubt the coldest fish I have ever come across. You never want to kiss or cuddle or, God forbid, have sex. Furthermore, have you ever asked how my work was going? Have you ever asked how I feel about anything? Have you ever asked what I would like to do? No! Your life has been centered around Brian. You have made me feel like a stranger in my own house.
We have at last cleared the air. After 5 years of a miserable marriage, I can finally say out loud, I made a mistake.
Maybe we both did.
Well, we have completed a positive behavior study, an in-house assessment, an autism diagnostic interview, an autistic diagnostic observation, a Jillian rating profile, a pervasive development disorder screening test, along with genetic screening that found no chromosome abnormalities. The previous physicians evaluating Brian checked for kidney dysfunction and diabetic metabolic disorders, both revealing no conclusive finding. Also, there appears to be no abnormal behavioral patterns to be concerned about for a child of his age. Oh. We can safely state that as a result of this extensive evaluation, we find no trace of autism or Asperger's. Now, pertaining to our complete physical exam, we recommend that you schedule an eye exam as soon as possible, since we detected his inability to clearly focus. Now, this condition is no cause for alarm, since it can be easily improved and will ultimately clear up. Also, an exam with an audiologist is advised, since we detect a modest hearing deficiency. Again, with today's medical advancements, any loss can be easily remedied. Now, you both should be very pleased to have such a wonderful little boy. The staff and I found Brian to be quite the child.
I told you there was nothing to worry about. Brian is just a normal kid. We have a beautiful son. And a great marriage. And I am one lucky guy. We both said some nasty things. I'm sorry.
Oh, yes.
I wanted to apologize for some things I said. I was so worried. And you know, I really love you.
I know you do.
End of play. Thank you. Our next play is A Class Reunion from Hell, written by Carol Froelich. We have three characters, Lucifer, as in the Lucifer, and the bitch. She has a long red scar down the side of her face, and she's wearing a class reunion dress and heels. And the wallflower. She is also wearing a classy reunion sexy dress and a virtual retinal display headset. The setting is hell, the time is the present, 2014.
Ah! Roll up, roll up, roll up. I'm Lucifer. Welcome to hell, madam. Take your shoes off, please, at the door. And let me get you programmed into your most hellish earth moment. For eternity. Well, that is what hell is. Ooh, burning hot?
Oh, yes, yes, the
ground's
hot.
Good, we finally got the temperature right. Finally. You can sit, take a load off.
Okay. I want a lawyer.
Sorry, no can do. This one's a live wire. I need to get her programmed pronto. So, what was your worst moment on Earth?
Oh, hands down, class reunion 2013.
The class reunion of 2013? Wait, that was her worst time, too.
Her who?
The wallflower. You're wasting your breath. She can't hear or see you.
What's that thing? Is it that thing?
Yes,
on her head?
Yes. That is a virtual retinal display headset. I got a really good deal. I bought 10 million of them. Cheap. The wallflower is reliving the class reunion over and over again. Perhaps I've been more knowingly devilish than usual. Bringing these two together makes their lives here doubly miserable. Hell is other people. Jean-Paul Sartre thinks that you're the only one that owns that line.
That grotesque laceration. How could I have missed it? You're the bitch!
Excuse me?
You're the bitch. Everyone called you that.
Everyone who?
Well, everyone at your high school, for starters.
Who did you get that from?
No one had to tell me. I've seen the tapes of her whole life. You were bitchier than bitchy to her in school.
She brought it on herself. Miss Perfect, teacher's pet. I wanted to push her face in the mud.
Well, you did, in a manner of speaking.
Did what?
Come on now, you can't have forgotten. Drawing a mustache on her poster for class president. Starting a rumor that she was pregnant. Do you want me to go on? And then the class reunion. Do I have to say more?
You think that was my fault? Is that why I'm here? For God's sakes, I don't even believe in hell.
Nor does she. And look where you both are. This is hell, madam, whether you like it or not. and I'm the devil incarnate. Ta-da!
Oh, scary, scary.
Do not make fun of me, madam.
Don't sulk. It doesn't become you. So, do I or don't I?
Do you or don't you what?
Have a chance to get out of here.
Slim chance.
I've got to get out of here.
Don't bother looking for an exit. You'll have to get by me, which you won't.
Could I make a case for myself?
Well, you'd better make it quick. I'm playing a game of Devil May Cry in half an hour. I don't want to miss that. Go on, then.
I wanted to show everyone at the class reunion that, well, I finally got my life back on track. You know, after high school.
And did you ever stop to wonder if the wallflower would come?
To the reunion? Would you if you were a plum pudding with heavy glasses? But don't...
What if you'd graduated cum laude from MIT, got your PhD, and started your own robotics firm?
Oh, of course she would, wouldn't she? See what I had to put up with in high school? Don't keep interrupting me. I was cool. Confident. Snazzy outfit. Cute hairdo. Like high school, I was the main event.
So, I have got to run with all this emotional stuff. It makes them feel better. So, you must have felt really good about yourself.
I felt I was somebody. I wasn't worthless. I did deserve to be born.
Earth parents can do a number on their children, can't they?
Then, she made an entrance. Everyone's eyes were on her. She stood there, still for a moment, long blonde hair, shapely, bum-grazing silver mini-dress, stilettos, slinky, sexy. I didn't recognize her at first. And then, it was the way she smoothed her hair back. The way she used to when she was nervous in high school. It was the wallflower, and everyone was looking at her. She knew what she was doing. She was trying to upstage me.
Oh, I'm kicking ass!
I walked up to her and looked her up and down, you know, pointedly. And then I laughed in her face. I turned around to look at everyone else and laughed again. But this time, it didn't work. Not like in high school. No one laughed with me.
My silver bracelets are deflecting her insults.
She brushed right by me. Everyone's eyes still on her. She walked over to the bar and ordered a glass of red wine, cool as a cucumber. And then she swiveled. She swiveled on her high heels and looked straight at me.
I'm teaching that bitch what it costs to insult an Amazon.
I just flipped. I totally lost it. I don't know how I managed to walk over there. I felt like I was possessed.
And now everyone's eyes were riveted on you both.
Even the band had stopped playing.
Of course, this was the wet dream of everyone at the class reunion. What do you think people come for? Well, maybe the score. But this was the ultimate entertainment. And here we have on the left, the bitch. And on the right, the wallflower.
Ah, she's grabbing my hair!
Ah! Oh,
and it came off. In my hand, she was bald.
You didn't know?
Didn't know what? I was on a roll.
And you stole it from her, didn't you?
Stole what?
The only night that made any sense of her life to her. The class reunion of 2013. Yes, look at her closely. She achieved everything she could have dreamed of. And then she got her diagnosis. And she had nothing to lose. This was going to be her night of nights. Nothing could go wrong. And then everything went wrong. And she cracked. Not in high school, not in the 20 years since. But now she finally cracked.
She went berserk. She emptied her wine glass and broke off the stem. Then she came at me with the shard of glass. She wanted to kill me! I was scarred for life, and all those staring eyes wherever I went. For the rest of my life, I started drinking, big time. I couldn't stop. I was too blotto to see the truck when it came at me.
And her cancer got worse and took her pretty rapidly.
Haven't we suffered enough?
Redemption doesn't come like a lightning bolt. Not in this venue, madam. Oh, who am I kidding? I'm moved by their story, and I'm never moved by anything. Can't let this happen too often. I'd lose my job. And we're packing them in like sardines in here. And the bitch would be a royal pain in the ass if she ever stayed here. Oh, hi, Petey? Is God there? She's busy. Only take a couple of minutes. Come on, tell her. Okay. Oh, good afternoon, Goddy Two Shoes. How's things in heaven these days? Still cool? look, we're a bit overcrowded here, but I've got a couple of really good candidates for you. Now listen, I'll send them by and...
And everyone freezes and curtain. Our next play is Figures of Speech by Anne McCardo. The cast of characters are Dick, middle-aged man, Jane, Dick's wife, and Adam, their friend, and a detective. The setting is the living room of a New York apartment, and the time is present day, late afternoon.
He was hiding behind the sofa. Are you kidding? While I talked on the phone? Well, how much could he know? I mean, really. First of all, he could only hear my side of the conversation. And second of all, how reliable could he be? Well, he was probably in agony. He's been sitting on that sofa all day, every day, for so many months. Now he can hardly move. And with his new oversized gut, I can't believe he can fit back there at all. And third of all, well, he's really kind of losing it.
He did call me at the precinct, so he's not kidding around. He said that you were planning a murder. That's what he said he heard. He's worried about you, Jane. and a little bit of afraid of you at the same time. I thought I'd better come over and talk to you in person.
Oh, my God! He must have had the air completely squeezed out of his lungs. Zero oxygen in his blood. He was hallucinating. Oh, it would have had to have been something like that, because I'm clearly not planning to kill my husband, and most definitely not plotting his death on my phone.
There's not much I can do officially about a claim like this, but I just thought, since I've known you guys since high school, I thought, you know, I might intervene, perhaps save a life.
That feels nice, Adam.
Yeah, I'm touching, aren't I?
And wouldn't it be nice if you could save a life so easily? But this conversation won't prevent death, because I'm not going to kill anyone.
Don't try to deny it, Jane. I heard you clearly, and I was in no way impaired.
Why don't you just tell us exactly what you heard Jane say, and when?
Well, it was just last night. Jane came into the living room, already talking on the phone. I was behind the sofa, on the floor, trying to get the remote that had landed just out of reach. Since you were on the phone, I didn't say anything. Then I heard what you were saying, and I stayed down. I wasn't sure what you'd do if you found me there.
Well, it seems like you've been doing a lot of eavesdropping lately. But what exactly was it you heard that when you were wedged between the sofa and the wall and your arms stuck out underneath, fingers grazing the remote, unable to grasp it, and no doubt all pissed off because you were missing the game on ESPN.
Picturesque, Jane, though not completely accurate. But it doesn't matter what my exact position or state of mind was. What matters is you and what you were saying.
And that was...
and I quote exactly, "I'm going to kill him."
You go ahead.
You go ahead.
Dick, honey, sit down.
Yes.
You remember the time I used your razor and you figured it out because you cut your face?
Yes, it was just last week. Of course I remember, but...
Do you remember what you said to me?
Well, I remember I was pissed off.
You were, yeah, and you rightly so. I never should have done that, especially without telling you. I felt awful, didn't I?
Yes, Jane, and I apologize for getting pissed off. So what does this have to do with why you're planning to kill me? What's the point?
I'd like you to try to cast your mind back to the moment and see if you can relive it. Can you remember what you said to me?
Really, you're making too much of this. I moved on. I'm not mad anymore. I wasn't mad by the time the styptic kicked in and my chin stopped bleeding. Honestly, I wasn't that mad. Why can't you believe that?
Oh, I do. I do, Dick. I do believe it. And that's my point. I'll refresh your memory. You said, and I quote exactly, "Jane, I will kill you for that."
That's a figure of speech, Jane. You know I didn't mean that literally.
Exactly! It's a figure of speech. You didn't mean it literally.
Oh, my God. Are you telling me... Do you mean to say that... Adam, do you think... Oh, my God.
You see my point?
Oh, I'm so sorry, Jane. I don't know why I took what you said literally. I guess I've been feeling like, well, we can finish this later. I'm sorry, Adam. I'm really sorry I called you away from work.
Don't worry. I'll go now. Look, you know I love you guys. So work it out, okay?
Thanks, man. And I appreciate it.
Thanks, Adam. You're a good friend.
Are you having an affair?
What? How can you ask me that, Dick? Oh, that is so hurtful. I have been nothing but supportive while you've been going through this rough spot in your career.
Well, you and Adam seem pretty close.
Well, we are. And you are too. You're close to him too. You're the one who called him.
Yeah, but what about all that touching?
Touching? Oh, you mean that's touching? That was not touching. It was touching. I was touched that he was worried about us. Dick, both of us! Oh, for God's sake! All the bad feelings you're having are about you, not about me. So why don't you take a long look at yourself before you accuse me of anything else?
You're right. I know. I've gotten fat and lazy. I feel useless and unattractive in every way. I don't even know how to look for a job anymore. God knows what I'd do if I actually landed one.
I'm sorry. Let me try not to be snotty. I'll help you, Dick, but I'm tired too. You know, when we got married, you were Mr. Broker, raking in the big bucks and feeling good about yourself and strutting and pulling your weight. Well, there's a figure of speech for you. Now, I feel like I'm pulling your weight, and you're getting heavier and heavier.
We need to make a plan. I need to make a plan. But I've put out so many resumes over the many months. The best responses I've gotten are silence. The others are veiled statements. You're not good enough. Sometimes they're not even veiled at all. The last rejection was a slap in the face.
The Smith-Barney interview? But you said that went well.
Yeah, well, I lied. It's not easy to always have bad news. So I exaggerated a little. Well, a lot. That HR bitch Debbie clearly didn't agree with whoever thought I should be called in. She was nasty right from the beginning.
I don't want to think about it anymore. I'm going to take Wags up for a pee. I'll pick up the Times too. Do you need anything?
No, thanks, honey. I'll start dinner.
I'll be back in a flash. Wait!
Adam, Jane. Yeah, all under control. But listen, can you do me a favor? Can you bring in a bitch named Debbie in HR at Smith-Barney? Oh, you bet it's legit this time. Dick was there for an interview last week, and he just told me she slapped him in the face!
End of play.
So our next play is Campaigning for Valentine's by Gina Drake. The characters are Marco, a music teacher with an ego the size of New York. Jose, Marco's best friend who has no luck with women. Annie, mom frustrated by Marco's blatant mom dating. The set is a sitting apartment. Is there an empty picture frame? We can't hang it, but this is, imagine there's a whole mirror right here. Our actors will make it come to life for you. At Rise, Marco is sitting on the couch with his guitar.
Well, how'd your date go?
Really?
Nothing changed. I think I'll write a book.
all the women that I've never loved.
What happened?
Well, after I made reservations, at a classy restaurant, and after, I spent a small fortune on entertainment, food, drink, etc. It became, like always, at the end of the night, she made it perfectly clear that she wanted never to see me again. So, this time, after her rejection, I handed her a bill for half the meal, half the drink, and half the entertainment. And parking, too.
And? I see.
Well, actually, I don't see anything right now.
Obviously, you haven't listened to anything I've told you. It might be your presentation, or it could be your timing, or possibly your engagement.
My equipment is fine.
Your equipment? Then it's probably your presentation. For example, I'm no different than you. Well, maybe a little different in a visual way. Like, it's all in the technique. Mastery of the tools. Being able to manipulate the situation to your advantage. You can say anything to anyone. As long as you,
say it with a smile.
I realize the reason I keep failing with women is because I have been listening to you all along. I thought you were great. So great that I tried to steal your personality. And my mistake, because now I see that I'm an asshole.
Nicely done. Yeah, but there is still so much more I can teach you about women.
Oh, can't wait. I can't wait.
Let me start at the beginning. You don't take them to an expensive restaurant on the first date.
Well, where do you suggest? A fast food joint? That's not gonna get me a second date.
Take them out for a drink. Why spend your money on the unknown? You, of all people, should know. You have to do your research before you, before investing.
Good point. I suppose I'm trying to impress them by taking them to somewhere nice and to make up for what I'm lacking.
There is that. Tell me, what are you looking for in a date?
Oh, nothing special, just a good time, really.
You're looking for that return on investment. Am I right?
Return on investment.
Return on investment.
Okay, I get it. This got really creepy.
Fact of life. We were all looking for the same thing.
It's hard enough to get a date, let alone, much less make some sort of return on investment.
What about at your job? I've seen some of the women you work with. There's a great pool to pull from.
They're all bean counters. No excitement there.
Take them to a bar. Get them an apple teeny or two. And before you know it, they'll turn into porn stars.
Wow. Some technique.
I'm telling you how. You just have to follow my guidance and you'll have more dates than you can handle. I don't do so bad.
Oh, come on. You don't have to do anything. You just have to play the guitar, have a gig, and they come flocking to you.
Yes, I am blessed in that respect. But more so in my teaching. Hmm? You should teach a guitar lesson. There's plenty of opportunity there.
I'm looking for someone my own age. And not looking to get arrested.
I'm not talking about the kids. It's the moms. My colleagues at the music school call me the mom whisperer.
You really are that. Are the mom married to dad?
Not always, but they're very grateful. I've always had good luck discussing their kids' musical prowess over drinks or dinner. Moms are very easy to persuade, but you have to know how to massage the right areas of their emotions. Mostly, they spend their days running around picking up the kids, making dinner, and finally, making dinner for the family, cleaning up. They crave something to break the monotony of their day. And that's where I come in.
Why don't you show me some of your mom technique? Maybe I'll be able to pick up a few things.
Yeah, that is an excellent idea. All right. You, I'll pretend to be finishing a lesson. Okay, Jimmy. Now, why don't you just play that chord again? Play that again a few couple times, and I'll get the door. Hi, Donna. Donna, come on in. We were just finishing up.
Hi. Oh, I only got a few minutes. I have to get Jimmy to karate. I haven't had a moment to myself all day. He's got hockey in the morning, and then swimming and karate in the afternoon. Oh, he's having all the fun. Oh, I'm exhausted.
Well, you, my dear, look amazing for such a tough schedule.
Oh, thank you, Marco. It's not easy, you know. I had to miss my hair appointment and everything.
Oh, no one would ever know. You look marvelous.
Oh, come on, Jimmy. Let's let Mr. Marco get back to him playing with his instrument.
We should meet to discuss Jimmy's progress sometimes. Maybe a parent-teacher conference.
Where would you suggest?
You know, the tavern is right around the corner.
Oh. Ah, don't drink.
Then why don't we go for a cup of coffee sometime and talk?
I don't drink coffee either.
Look, our bodies are 90% water. There has to be some kind of liquid you regularly ingest.
You're good.
Years of experience. I can turn anything around in my direction. You just have to be quick on your feet.
Got it.
So, at the end of a long day at your work, slide up to Sally Bean counter, lean in, and...
You're teaching tonight?
Nothing scheduled, but perhaps a mom needs a consultation.
You need me to leave?
No, no, it's... No, watch and learn, my friend. Watch and learn.
I fell in love! You had one of your teachers' conferences with Andrew!
with quite a few of us moms, lots of whining and dining going on.
You've got it all wrong.
You think I'm an imbecile? I know a player when I see him.
What were they supposed to learn from that?
I got nothing.
Like so. Okay, this play is called Open House, and it is by Constance Shute. The setting. This takes place on a Sunday afternoon in one of the bedrooms in a house that a realtor is holding an open house open for sale. This represents a child's crib in the room, and this is a double bed. Time, present day.
You don't need to see this room. Let's look at the other bedrooms down the hall.
Why? Is the wall color purple? Or... Oh, God, does it need a lot of work?
I just want to see the master bed first.
Okay, Roy, but I'll just take a quick peek.
No. No. I've seen enough.
Wait, Roy. Maybe the crib is a sign. Aren't you tired of looking? This house has most of what we want, and maybe Donnie is telling us that through this crib.
Come on, let's go look at the master.
In a minute, Roy. I haven't seen one since the accident. I thought it would be more painful, but... It doesn't. It makes me feel strong.
Good. I'm glad. Let's go check out the pool.
Why are you being so insensitive? That's not like you. With all that's happened, I need a moment. Look at the view out this window. There's even a yard in the front, so we can enjoy the view from outside. I can picture you barbecuing from the neighbors on the 4th of July.
That's a lot of grass to mow.
And you tossing a ball or having tea with the kids.
What?
We can still have a family.
What are you talking about?
Now that we've got the settlement, I want to move on.
This is not the time or the place now.
Roy. I want to have another child.
What?
I want to have another child. Oh, good idea. Let's start here. It would be so like us.
Totally ridiculous.
Why not? What have we got to lose?
No, I'm not kidding. No, button up your shirt.
We haven't much time before another buyer walks up the driveway.
Mel, stop it!
I can remember when you couldn't get enough of me.
You really want another child?
Roy, I don't have a lot of time left. It's been 2 years since the accident. And we both need to think about beginning again. The therapist agreed if we felt like we wanted another child, we should start trying. That it could actually help our relationship.
Okay, well, let's talk about this till we get home. Jesus Christ, it's stuck.
What is?
The door, it won't open. Jesus Christ. Where's the listing sheet? Call the realtor's cell phone. She must be downstairs.
Wait, Roy. It could be another sign.
Give me your cell phone. I'll call the realtor.
No.
Mel, I could use a little help right now.
I have been trying to help you for the past 2 years. All you do is push me away.
Push you away? I've been giving you the space you asked for. I've been doing everything the therapist said to do for you.
I know it. It's okay.
You wouldn't understand what's been going on since that day.
Well, then explain it to me.
What? Here? Now? Don't be silly.
I'm not being silly.
I can't. Not here.
Well, now you've got to tell me.
Trust me.
Okay. Call the realtor. We'll talk at home.
Jesus Christ, voicemail. Hello, this is Roy Jameson. My wife and I are at your open house. And we're stuck upstairs in the nursery bedroom. Would you please come up and unlock the door?
Now, after all that's happened to us, I don't know what's so ominous that you can't tell me now. Give me a hint.
Stop it, Mel. I'm not in the mood.
Then tell me, what else have we got to do?
I told you, I'll tell you at home. Jesus, I'm gonna break down this damn door!
Please, tell me now. I can handle it. Roy, I deserve it.
Jesus Christ! That's just it! You found a way to handle it. Wasn't
what?
Mel, it wasn't an accident.
Of course it was.
Mel, sit down.
Everyone, the doctors, the judge, both lawyers even, They all agreed there was nothing you could have done to have saved him.
I lost hold.
You lost hold of what?
I lost hold of the stroller.
What?
I lost hold of the stroller. I lost hold of Danny.
No, that's not possible. You wouldn't do such a thing. You couldn't.
The stroller. It rolled down the driveway into the street.
What are you saying, Roy?
I was waiting for a call.
A call? You were waiting for a call?
Jesus Christ. I let the stroller go to answer my cell phone. Do you understand? Do you understand now? I let the stroller go to answer my goddamn phone! I let go of our son, and the stroller rolled into the street. The truck didn't swerve around the corner into our driveway, and I wasn't crossing the street with Donnie. Don't you understand? I let go of our son, and the stroller rolled into the street. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry! I'll move out this week.
Oh, is that your solution?
I'm just saying, most couples don't come back from this kind of accident. And I'm not sure how I'm going to live with myself, let alone you.
I can't take another loss, Roy.
What the hell did we do now?
I don't know. There's got to be a manual or some kind of manual on how to get through all of this. I'll call the therapist. We'll go back to therapy.
Can she erase my memory?
What about the good ones? Growing up. Our wedding. Donnie's birth. After 18 hours in labor, I thought he'd never show up, and you were sweating more than me when he finally arrived.
It's not fair. You didn't deserve to lose him, no.
We both made him. And we both lost him, Roy. I have it again.
How can you forgive me?
Honestly, right now, I'm not sure.
It's not possible.
You need to forgive yourself.
I can't. Ever.
Maybe not alone. Roy, you've always put our family first, and I've always felt safe. We can build that together.
Melanie's cell phone rings. Ring.
Don't answer it.
Ring. This play is called Random Acts by Susan Fry. The characters are suit number one, Randall. Suit number two, Peril. They are both uptight, priggish, suited. They represent a universal model of the one percenter wannabes. And there's a bartender. You're in an upscale bar in the financial district, Back Bay, Boston. It's present day, late fall afternoon.
Have you noticed how many people seem to be moving south? Harold, are you paying attention?
Yes, sorry, Randall. You mean south like Cape Cod?
No, very south.
Oh, you mean like New Jersey?
Good Lord. Nobody voluntarily moves to New Jersey. No, I mean past the Mason-Dixon line.
It's like the Carolinas and Florida and Texas.
Well, yes, like the Deep South. But Texas may be another category altogether. Texas is definitely South, but also the wild, wild West. I'm trying to be very pragmatic about this, because I'm looking at my options. My wife would love it since she is a Richmond, Virginia debutante, came out to Southern society in the 80s and gravitates to that Southern sensibility.
I thought you were an inherited Boston Brahmin, Randall.
Well, yes, but my wife just loves herself. Do you have any connections to the Deep South?
Not really. Born and bred here in New England. Some ties to New York through my partner, but we do have strong ties to coming out officially married this summer right here in Boston.
No, right. We're the gay state. Hey, a recent ruling mandated legal gay marriages in the state of Virginia. Now that's something.
Yes, yes, I know that. But no thanks to the black Southerners. They've held black support of gay lesbian movement in spite of our support for the civil rights movement. No quid quo pro there.
Well, we all know those Christian churches and the wacko preachers wield a mighty strong influence, especially amongst uneducated masses.
Yes, minorities, yes, you are right about that.
So, any thoughts about living in the South?
Seems advantageous for manufacturing. Cutting production costs, and of course the cost of living may be cheaper. Real estate, energy costs and all. Really, why would I need to have more reasons than just economic? Why do you think people are moving to the South?
Yeah, well, for one thing, you just mentioned. I think you might get more bang for your buck down south, but that isn't a critical factor for me either. It would be more for the so-called quality of life, the refinement, the laissez-faire gentility. You know, the gone with the wind kind of gentility.
Gone with the wind. Are you crazy? Those days are long gone with the wind. Even Red Butler didn't give a damn. He must have been a northerner, too.
Well, I know that slavery has been abolished down there, and my wife says that all races live in total harmony now.
You're putting me on, Randall. Maybe in the country club circuits, though I doubt that. Restrictions still apply, but the plantation mentality is alive and well in the South, even though the old slave quarters have now been condominiumized.
My wife insists that racial harmony is an accepted rule.
It may be the rule among the elites, but even money doesn't protect you from prejudice.
An old classmate of mine at Yale, in architecture, a black Southerner, declined a teaching post at MIT and opted to return to old Mississippi, where, I quote him, "In the South, at least I knows who's my enemies is."
Wow, that's very telling.
I think so. I think he was referring to restricted neighborhoods. A lot of city planning in the South and Midwest ghettoized black communities. I guess isolation doesn't make problems go away, but it does make them easier to locate.
You know, Randall, Boston has plenty of racial minorities, but I don't have much interaction with them unless they can invest, so this topic just doesn't hold my attention.
We Northerners don't see ourselves as racist, but Southerners, according to my wife, attribute that to Northern hypocrisy. At any rate, we remain a racist nation. Obama may have even helped exacerbate the fact. The Ku Klux Klan is a formidable force in the South, while we enjoy the illusion of tolerance.
You mean the Ku Klux Klan? I believe they're on to the gays, too.
Politics is something to weigh more conservative and overrun with Republicans, though all politicians seem to be lying in the same bed these days.
Republicans do rule. Now, House and Senate. We'll see nothing but a Republican agenda, but liberal Democrats would be a rare minority. Not sure I want to add to that one.
Just because you're a minority already? Harold, do you realize that in about 25 years, you'll be in another minority, one as white brother?
Yes, but a very rich and privileged white brother. Let the pessimists eat cake.
Yes. So, Harold, where do you see yourself in 25 years?
Denver and I plan to retire to Venezuela for my 45th birthday. Great climate of sailing.
I'm looking at 45, too. Already we're exploring house plans for a Nantucket retreat with a landing pad. Now, even if we move south, we definitely want global accessibility.
One of our concerns is whether South America is the draw. Have you factored in the climate for the South?
Yes. The South seems to have a longer optimal weather conditions. More opportunities to get out on the old golf course.
On second thought, Randall, weather may be a crapshoot now with global weirding, as they call it. Georgia and parts of Florida were colder than New England last week. And it's not even winter yet.
Do you get into those conspiracy theories about the military-industrial complex altering weather patterns?
Well, they did it during the Vietnam War, didn't they? Although it didn't do a hell of a lot of good. It's common knowledge, Randall, that the government continues to be basically inept and duplicitous as well.
This bartender sucks. Either she is deliberately ignoring us or unaware of the bartender's servitude obligations.
Maybe the service would be better in the South. They do know how to grovel with all that gentility and all. Back to the weather, Randall. About California for climate.
Yikes! Harold, what have you been smoking? California is drying up so fast the ground is buckling. They already had water rationing, for God's sake.
I guess. And then there's all that New Age wackiness.
True, but no one really is talking about the major issue in the Pacific, which is Fukushima.
Fukushima? What about Fukushima? You never hear about it in the news.
That's right. You won't in American news. A lot of important news goes unreported. I go on European and Asian news. Since 2011, 4 of the 6 reactors shut down, and radioactive contamination has been pouring into the Pacific.
Well, stay clear of it. We're safe here on the Atlantic.
Not really, Harold. Scientists have documented the devastating environmental impact already.
So what if it hasn't affected humans? It hasn't affected humans, has it?
Well, you won't hear anything about humans because the Japanese government has put a jail sentence on any journalist reporting the truth.
Do you really believe this stuff? It seems like it could be in the conspiracy newspeak category. Another fear-mongering ploy.
Well, I believe it, all right, and so do credible scientists in this country. People in the know have already left that area of Japan.
Japan is on the other side of the world. Who cares?
Some do. Even that famous New York physicist, Michio Kaku, got his parents out of Japan last year. Really, how radioactive stuff is in the Pacific Rim. So don't eat California sushi. Now, I'm not kidding. Probably was a consideration for Kaku's parents.
Well, keep that in mind. Okay. If it's not for the weather or in economics, it certainly can't be for the intellectual climate. The South is steeped in rednecks. Christian fundamentalists and really dumbed-down people, Randall.
Yes, some of those reality TV shows are really scary. The Housewives of Miami? Ooh.
And everyone and their nephew wields at least one gun.
True enough.
Legally.
But in Massachusetts, we've headed off that problem, more or less, with gun control.
A lot of those Southerners are still fighting the Civil War, too. What do you have to do to get some decent service in this place?
Well, the North End has its share of rednecks, fundamentalists, and dumbos too. But overall, it's probably safer here, even though the Marathon bomber penetrated Homeland Security.
Really? Randall, how do you account for those kinds of random acts? Does it ever cross your mind that we are somehow especially protected, like a veil of invincibility surrounding you?
You mean, does wealth keep me protected or insulated from the whack jobs out there?
Well, yes. Don't you think that one can pay for, say, social barriers?
You nailed it, Harold. Yes, I do feel immune to those kinds of tragedies, those random acts. I believe that fate has a way of preserving those of us who can truly make a difference.
You mean making a difference in the market?
Yes. Wealth does wield power, privilege, and protection. The very great men will always persevere. Do you think I'm a delusional elitist?
It's not a delusion. We are the chosen ones. The new millennium top shelf. Immune to the foibles of common men.
Maybe we are elitists, Harold. But deserving ones. I would like to think there is a nirvana or pronoia that supports our valiant efforts.
What the hell is that?
Pronoia. Oh, it is spelled P-R-O-N-O-I-A. I just read about it in the New Yorker. It's the opposite of paranoia. It came out in the 80s. Just like you!
Very funny, Randall.
You know, not really, Howard. It means some kind of benevolent universe looking out for the deserving one of a kind. Kind of New Age, like think rich and you'll be rich.
Randall, I never would have taken you for magical thinking. You are thinking way too much about this. Forget the South. This is Nirvana. And we are its rulers. The best of everything, climate, seashores, mountains, accessibility.
True, Lear jets and yachts for quick getaways.
Also, this is the holy mecca for intellectuals, medicine, and technology. Even the Arabs came here for health care.
Right, and entertainment, celebrities, soon to be local gambling, and games at our disposal.
Games? You mean the sports, the industries? Yep, fantastic shipping, restaurants, great bars, except for this one.
Yes. Gentrification, gun control, and a city life to die for.
Jesus, besides lifelong financial security, we still have more money coming out our asses. Randall, it can't get much better than this.
You know, it could get better, and I think it will. Bigger and better things beaming into our future, Harold, and an escalating stock market driving the engine. Happy days are here again. Let us... Oh, fuck that bartender. Finish your drink and let's just get out of here.
Randall, I don't know why all these people are moving to the South, but frankly, I don't care.
Harold...
I don't give a damn.
Harold, right on! This is the best place to be. The new Garden of Eden. Now finish your drink and let's get the hell out of here. Well, I guess we'll have to toast with empty glasses. To our good fortune! And to the sweet life here in Boston! Ha
ha! End of play. We have recently been talking about a 6-word play. You all just heard a 10-minute play. But there is a period in history, you can Google it, in which someone made a bet with Ernest Hemingway that he could write a novel or play in 6 words. And he won, and this is what he wrote. For sale, baby shoes, never worn. So, we have some more that were written by Susan and Charles, who seems to be leaving. So we're going to have them read right now.
Be patient. Eventually, eggs will walk. I drove east, but not home. Armageddon countdown, rapidly ticking. 3, 2. I took to bed, demon tormented. She left him hanging, the bitch. A half hour passed, he succumbed. Full-blown inequality available, Middle America. My wife died, her only mistake. neglect your duty, but marry me. Too many cooks. The supper burned.
Thank you. We want to encourage all of you in your feedback sheets to write us a 6-word play. While you're, you know, while you're getting your, having your wine and your snack, write a 6-word play for us, and we will read them, and perhaps yours will be read at the next stage reading. Give it a try.
There you go.
And this is going to be the actors out.